You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today, I'm not going to do a story on the Ebola virus, although there are some updates, and if I have time, I'll get to them. But I want to give my impressions, and that's probably the best way to describe them, as well as my opinions and comments, but my impression of what probably is going to happen on November 4th and why it's going to happen. I listen to a lot of talk radio. I sample it. I really like to see different styles, but one of the reasons I listen to it is this show is not set up for call-ins. If you listen to the show in the past, and before I forget, the way you listen to this show is go to my companion blog, pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. At the very top, you'll have links to the last 60 to 80 shows, and at the very bottom of the page, you'll have links to my entire portfolio, except for some of the early shows that were accidentally overwritten. But other than that, all my shows are available online. You can listen at your convenience. What I'm doing right now is I'm broadcasting over the internet. So if you're listening right now on the internet, you're hearing the show, but it's being recorded. And what I do in post-production is I put a link up today's show. It'll be on probably around 10 o'clock. Tonight is what I shoot for, depending on the length of the show. Occasionally, it'll be the following day. And it really depends on what I have going on. But that's most of my listeners listen to it as a podcast. They don't listen to it when I'm actually broadcasting the show because people are working. People are going to school. And our audience is primarily the Richland College student body, the students, as well as the staff and faculty. But I would say the majority of my listeners, besides them, are people that go to one of the search engines, such as Google, and type in some keywords or tags. And based on that, they're usually looking for videos or audio. And that's how they get to my broadcast. And listeners, at least in terms of measured by hits, have dramatically increased, which I'm thankful for, because initially when you start out, nobody knows you. They don't know if you're going to be around. I obviously have staying power. So my audience is slowly but surely building, which gives me some encouragement, and I think I've gotten a lot better once I switched from a weekly show to a daily show. But what I want to talk about is what I think is going to happen on November 4th, and that's Election Day, and it's less than 2 weeks away, 13 days away. If you listen to the news and look at the polls, and let me say a word about the polls, you have to be very, very leery of the polls, especially the further away you are from an election. What the news media does, mainstream media does, is rely on polls to shape, and I think a more accurate term would be to manipulate, public opinion. And unfortunately, a lot of news today is, believe it or not, poll-driven. They will go out and ask certain questions, and that's where you got to be leery of them. The questions can be somewhat misleading, also the order, the wording of the question, the order of the question, you have to really look into the internals of it. Early on, you would have gotten the impression, as many people that don't really follow this closely, that in many races throughout the country, either the Democrat candidate was ahead, or it was at best a 50-50 situation. In other words, it was a dead even tie. I don't believe that at all. And I need to disclose this because, and I've said this on many shows, but if you're new to the show, you need to at least know where I'm coming from politically. I'm what's called a classical liberal. A classical liberal. Most people, at least in the United States, would identify a classical classical liberal as a libertarian. That's how they would try to characterize me. And I don't mind that description, though I there are some subtle differences. I favor very limited government at all levels. Because what happens is, and it usually happens after a war or a crisis, government gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And that is what's happened to the United States over time. At one time, the federal government was rather small, less than 3% of the economy. It wasn't huge like it is now. But what happened is World War I happened, and we had a progressive president then, namely Woodrow Wilson, a Democrat, that before the elections promised the American people he would keep us out of war. And then a few months later, after he was reelected, he got us involved in World War I. And that has happened not only in the United States, but any country. That's why it's very, very important to stay out of wars. And that's what the Founding Fathers, when they drafted the Constitution, made it very clear that only Congress could declare a war, not the president. Because presidents have a tendency to get us into war. And wars kill people, but more importantly, what erodes is the liberty and the freedoms of the American people as the size of the government grows larger. And you get more and more intervention into the economy, and it becomes a precedent for more and more intervention over time. And that's exactly what has happened. Over time, after every war, why initially you'll have a demobilization, and that's what happened after World War I, World War II, and the Vietnam War, the size of the government still got bigger and bigger. Where today, the size of the government is about, and I haven't checked the statistics lately, but it was running around 21% in terms of the entire economy. That's about seven times bigger than it was for most of the history of the United States. In other words, this large government that we have today is really about 100 years old. And it was initially, it got the impetus to grow from the progressives that were for government intervention. Now, on some cases, I would support the government intervention. An example with that, I would be in favor of the women getting the vote. And they did, even though progressives resisted it. I need to remind you, it was Woodrow Wilson that was very resistant to granting women the right to vote. So I'm glad that we had that change. And I'm not against regulation per se, because you have instances where the health of the people need to be protected, both in terms of food and drugs. So I'm not saying that you should have no government, but the regulation, the best government first should be local, county, state, and only as a really last resort should the federal government be involved. Because at the local level, you have or can have more control. The people know what's going on. They know who's corrupt, and they'll vote them out. Now, what happened is you have a lot of reformers or progressives that were trying to throw out of office the corrupt politicians of both parties. And you had a lot of corruption. You had machine politicians, and you had a lot of payoffs. That has not changed. That has continued. You're always going to have a degree of corruption in any political system. Don't be naive. But what I'm driving at is this. You need to keep the size, the scope, or the breadth of any government in check. And that's what the U.S. Constitution was designed to do. It's a system of checks and balances, of limited powers and stated powers. What is the role of Congress? What is the role of the president? Unfortunately, over time, the U.S. Constitution has been eroded to the point, some would say, it's a dead letter. I'm not at that point, but unless you have, for example, a Congress willing to stand up to a president that exceeds his powers, then no matter how well written the Constitution is, it fails. You need people of integrity, people of principle, people that are not in the pockets of special interests, no matter what that special interest is. So you're only going to have good government if you have people of character in any office, because money will corrupt people. Bribes, it will. Now, the bribes can take several forms. Some, it's just payoffs. You get a box of money and you're expected to pass a law or implement a policy, and you have people that do that at all levels. That hasn't changed. And they're both parties, too. That's just the risk. That's the why it's very, very important to vet the person you're voting for. And if you're in the political party, make sure that corruption doesn't destroy your party. And I think increasingly corruption in the United States is getting worse. Now, it takes a more subtle form. Now, I still think the payoffs go on. But today, the corruption is in campaign contributions. What? Because all politicians need money to get their message out. They need campaign contributions to, for example, put on the radio and television ads that you're starting to see and will see more and more as we approach Election Day on Tuesday, November 4th. And the people that want to get laws passed know this. It could be a company. It could be an individual, first of all. It could be a company. It could be a union. It could be an industry. It could be a group of industries. Now, I'm not against people that have concerns and want laws passed to get their views across to their representatives, whether they're in the House of Representatives or the Senate, or for that matter in the executive branch and the various departments in the executive branch. That's the way the system should work. But what's driving a lot of your policies today, and illegal immigration is just one example, as well as difficulty, for example, of changing our tax code. And I probably could do a show on that, but I'll limit my comments to it. Where you have large contributors, and they usually band together, it could be a lot of times it's an association. It could be a union, or it could be a association of, for example, business people. They are going to get access to our representatives and senators, which they should. Nothing wrong with it. But where it tends to cross the line and starts to have a corrupting influence is when the size of the contributions become large and the individual becomes dependent upon them. Because they need to get their message out. They're concerned about staying in power, getting reelected. That is their number one concern, by the way. And if you're unhappy with your congressman or woman or your senator, the way you get their attention big time is vote against them. That gets their attention, because if enough people do that, they find that the office that they thought they were going to spend the next 20 or 30 years in is no longer theirs. And I think we're coming to that type of election, because I listen to a lot of talk radio, but primarily I like to hear what the callers are saying. And I've heard this over many months. One of the big issues, and these are people that are working, some have two or three jobs, and I've heard it over and over again. They are not happy with Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, and I'm not surprised. What they are finding out is this. First of all, most of them had a plan that they deliberately went out and they could afford it. It met their needs. They were satisfied with it. This is prior to Obamacare. Then what happened last October, and it's happening again this October, really after the elections, but it's happening. They find out to get one of these metallic plans that is part of Obamacare, the bronze, the silver, the gold, they find out the premiums are much higher. In other words, it costs them more just to get the insurance, but also the deductibles are much higher. When I say higher, usually 3, 5, some cases 6 times what they currently have. And what also aggravates them is they get coverages that they don't need. It's like someone telling you, you must buy this car that's fully, has all the options on, has all the bells and whistles on it. Well, I can't afford it. Well, that, I'm sorry, but you got to buy it. So there's going to be a lot of pushback on that issue alone, on Obamacare. I'm simplifying. I've done several shows on Obamacare. I'm not going to do an Obamacare show, but I am going to remind you there are a lot of mad people out there that are going to push back and are going to make political decisions on the Obamacare issue alone. Now, I'm not saying that there's some people that have benefited from Obamacare. The problem is, who's going to vote? I will tell you who's definitely going to vote. If you were happy with your health insurance plan and now have a plan that cost you more money, significantly more money, we're not talking pocket change here. We're talking minimum hundreds, and in most cases, thousands of dollars more. In other words, President Obama lied. It's not going to save you money. It's costing these people a lot more money. It's a plan that they don't want. And it's usually they can't keep their doctor and they can't go to the hospital that in the past they went to. And that's a lot of people. That's millions of people. And no, that includes Democrats and Republicans. So that is a major concern or issue of a lot of people. Is it the only concern? No. The bigger concern is what, if you ask some questions on polls, is the job situation and the economy. We are not back, and I always use this statistics because I think it brings it home. This is by far the worst economic recovery since World War II. By far. There's nothing close. You have to go back to the Depression years of the 1930s to find a worse situation in terms of a recovery. That was definitely a worse situation, and the recovery was terrible. Why? That was the first instance where we had, in peacetime, massive intervention on the government and the private sector. Massive increases in welfare programs, social insurance programs, but also make work programs. And it continued through World War II and after the war. But this recovery is by far the worst recovery. Now, what's a way to get that across? The highest number of people that were employed in the United States, and I'm going to use a round number, was 146.6 million people. I'm rounding a little bit up, and you can check that number, 146.6 million. When did you think that happened? Do you think it happened when Obama was president? No, it didn't. That happened in November, and we're coming up on November of 2007 when George Bush was president. That was about when the economy was peaking in terms of its growth, production, and people being employed. Because the next month, December of 2007, the growth rate in the economy started to decline. Not drastically, because you were at a peak. You're out, think of it as a mountaintop. Now, just last month, and I'm very suspicious of last month's jobs report, we finally got back to that number. Almost 7 years later, we got back to that number. Now, why is that important? And that really demonstrates why jobs is the number one concern of the American people, even if they have them. Because they don't know they're going to have them in the future. There's a lot of uncertainty out there. There's a lot of nervousness out there. What's going on? And I'm looking at the clock. I don't know if the lady's going to come in at 4. I hope she doesn't, because I get back my 4 o'clock slot. Where you have uncertainty, and it's pervasive in the economy, business owners, employers, are reluctant to make investments or expand their operations. They're reluctant to hire people. And that means you get a situation where we're a weak recovery. We're 5 years from the beginning of the recovery in July of 2009, 5 years ago, and we're not anywhere near a full employment rate of about 3%. Most of the time, we've been above 6, 7, 8, 9%. It actually hit 1 month at 10%. The majority of time, it's been above 8%. So why we've had a recovery, which means you haven't had two consecutive quarters of negative economic growth, and we have had job creation, there's no denying that. The problem is, and here's the challenge, and this is why it's a very bad situation for young people. Every month, without fail, you have what's called new entrants to the labor market, people looking for their first-time job. And you'll get a range of estimates, but it's roughly between 130,000 and 150,000 every month. Now, we're about 7 years. November will be marked the seventh anniversary of that high. Every month since that November, 7 years ago, that we're coming on the anniversary in a few days, we've had between 130 and 150,000 people enter the labor market. It's population growth. Now, you do the math, and you can choose the 130,000 number or the 150,000 number. I choose a higher number. I really think it's about 155,000, but that's my estimate. But the people of the Department of Labor, the commissioners in the past have been asked about that, and that's their range. Economists will have differences of opinion on how many people actually go for their first-time job every month. And it does fluctuate from month to month. Multiply that number first by 12, and then multiply it by 7. Or if you want to do it a little quicker, multiply that number by 84. Ladies and gentlemen, that's over 10 million jobs that were not created since 2007. Now, part of that is George Bush's fault. Presidents, whether Democrats or Republicans, get blame for what's happened in the economy, whether it's their fault or not. It comes with the job. And why we've had job creation and why we've had economic growth, what we haven't had are growth rates consistently month to month to month or quarter to quarter, because GDP, gross domestic product, is a quarterly number. We need to be growing at 4, 5, 6%. We're not, because if we were growing at 4, 5, and 6%, we would be creating 400, 500, 600,000 jobs a month. We're not doing that. We're not even close to doing that. And that's why jobs is the number one issue, because you have young people, whether they're a high school or college graduate or dropout, doesn't make much difference, are having difficulty finding their first career job, really their first job. And if they're fortunate, they might find a part-time job. And that could be stocking inventory on shelves, whether it's a grocery store or a retail store, or being a cashier. And there's nothing wrong with those jobs, or being a janitor or a stock clerk. Those are typical first jobs, because when you enter the labor market, first of all, you have little or no job experience, usually none, and you have limited amount of skills, and you're really an unknown quantity to the employer that's taking a chance in hiring you. He doesn't know you're going to be reliable and show up and dress properly and work hard. He doesn't know. He's taking a chance. But the reason why there's so we have a terrific job deficit is the uncertainty in the economy, largely driven by economic policies coming out of Washington, D.C., by both parties. Because where you have uncertainty, people will delay decisions and they won't expand their operations, which means they won't make capital investments if they already exist, or they won't even start a business, and they will really limit their hires. In other words, what you need to really be in a great situation is a booming economy. We don't have a booming economy. So when you add the economic situation, the high unemployment rate, persistently high unemployment rate, I know it's come down, But what's very misleading about that number is the labor participation rate has also fell. Typically, and it does vary over time, it has increased over the last 50 to 60 years, the labor participation rate gradually grew and grew and grew. So under Clinton and Bush, the normal range for the labor participation rate, those are the people that are actually seeking employment or working, was in the range of 66 to 67%. Today, it's under 63%, and that's a problem. And then you have what's called a discouraged workers, people that have looked for jobs and can't find them and are sitting it out. Now, to a certain extent, they're able to do that because of the welfare programs, starting with food stamps, Section 8 housing, income payments, earned income credits. In the past, the extension of the, if you had unemployment benefits. But the problem is people can't find permanent jobs. That is in a nutshell. So what are some of the two or three major drivers of this election? One is the economy / the job situation. On that ground alone, the Democrats are going to be defeated. Not in every district or every Senate race. But the economic policies of this president, supported by, remember, for the first 2 years, the House and the Senate were controlled by who? The Democratic Party. Remember, the Democratic Party won control of the House and the Senate in the 2006 election. So starting in 2007, 8, 9, 10, they controlled both houses. And then starting in 9, they controlled the presidency as well. But because of President Obama's failed economic policies, as well as shoving down the throat of the American people, Obamacare, the American people are going to push back. It's payback time. And if you happen to have a D after your name, you're in a tough race. It doesn't mean the American voters in love with necessarily the Republican candidates. I certainly am not. I'm not a Democrat or a Republican. And the reason is very simple. Both parties are fiscally irresponsible. They have run massive deficits year after year after year. Massive deficits. And all a deficit is where the federal government, for example, spends more money than they take in taxes. Now, they took in a lot of taxes this fiscal year that just ended the end of September, that they took in more than $3 trillion in taxes, over $3 trillion in taxes, but they spent over $3.5 trillion. And that's been the best year Obama's had, and that's not good. It's slightly under $0.5 trillion deficit. Every year President Obama has been in office, he's run deficits initially over $1 trillion every year. And yes, it's gradually, and that's the problem, it was too gradual, got it under, slightly under $0.5 trillion, which is over under $500 billion. I think the numbers, my memory serves, is $483 billion. But that's still larger than George Bush's largest deficit in his last year when the Democrats controlled the House and the Senate. So they caused those budgets, even though it was in a year when President Bush, George W. Bush, was president. You see, bills come due. So when you pile debt upon debt upon debt, what happens? Your so-called national debt gets larger and larger, and it's fast approaching $18 trillion. I don't know the exact date it's going to hit $18 trillion, but it's in the near future. I would say in the next 90 days or less, it's approaching that number. The problem is it's going the wrong way. Neither political party has shown the will, the insight, the courage, the vision to balance the budget. Every individual, family, business, church, school has to balance its budget because if it doesn't, it could find itself out in the street. In other words, bankrupt. And we have both political parties have showed no real leadership in getting us to a balanced budget. They always put out these nice projections that it'll happen in 10 years. The problem is we don't have 10 years. And that's going to get to my key point. Maybe you share my philosophy, political philosophy or not. I don't know. I think all budgets should be balanced, period. Because once you start this bad habit, I call it the spending addiction disorder, SAD, where there's no fiscal responsibility, no discipline, what are you doing? First of all, you're spending beyond the means of the American taxpayer. That's what it means when you run these massive deficits every year. How do you think you pay? The government pays its bills? It borrows money. And who is that burdening? It's burdening future generations of the Americans. First of all, it's hurting. It's not benefiting. It's hurting. It's putting a burden on not only people living today, as well as your children and grandchildren, but also future generations. Because most of this is not what the Democrats like to do. They don't like to use the word spending. We need to make an investment. You'll hear that a lot. We need to make an investment in community colleges or green energy or whatever the fad of the day is. What they're saying is we need to spend money. But because people don't like to hear spending money you don't have, they use the word investment. Now, yes, certain things are an investment. You're going to build a bridge, a road, a building. That's investment. It does have a payoff period over time. Most buildings stand for 50 to 100 years or more. And if properly maintained, can be in existence for 200, 300, 400 years. Eventually, they need to be replaced, and they are replaced. So I'm, again, not against investment, nor am I really against going into debt when you're actually going into debt because you're benefiting not only people currently living, but future generations. But it's not an investment when you're increasing people's welfare or entitlements. It's not. That's what I call Santa Claus socialism. And both parties are guilty of this, including mainly the Democratic Party. They try to get your vote by bribing you. In other words, make you dependent on government. We'll give you this if you vote for us. We'll give you some goodies. We'll increase the amount of your food stamps. We'll provide you an apartment. We'll give you a check every month. Excuse me, when did the American people lose the work ethic? This is corrupting you. You do not want to depend on the government. They will disappoint you every time. They will fail every time, or almost every time. Do I need to say 9-1-1? Do I need to say the Ebola crisis, the way that has been incompetently handled? Do I need to say the scandal at the Veterans Administration? Do I need to go across every year what the deficits have been, putting us in debt? And what's really being masked here is you have the Federal Reserve keeping deliberately, intentionally, although they're supposed to be independent, they're really creatures of Congress. And what the Federal Reserve, which is the central bank of the United States, has done to make the cost of the federal government low is to keep the interest rates near zero. It's called near zero interest rate policy. And they do that by keeping the federal funds rate near to zero. It's at 25 basis points, which is at 0.25%. It has been at that number since December of 2008 for 6 years. That's unheard of. And that is just enabling this bad habit, this spending addiction disorder, because that enables the government to sell its securities at low rates. But there's a problem with that. Investors are not stupid, believe it or not. Many former institutions that used to invest in Treasury securities aren't doing it anymore. And as a result, what's happened is the Federal Reserve, over these many years, although they're supposedly going to end it next month, we'll wait and see if they do that, has been buying these Treasury securities. They've become a buyer first resort. Now, I might have lost you, but the key point is this. The government has to pay its bills. It's spending more than you and I can be taxed to pay the bills. That's why they need to borrow. They know if they tried to tax us, there would be a tax revolt. The American people would not stand for it. would throw anybody, Democrat or Republican, out of office. So what do? They run up these deficits and they borrow money. They charge it. It's like using a credit card. And now it's about, our total debt is approaching, national debt is approaching $18 trillion. Now, most of you, I say that, you have no idea what that is. That is an awful lot of money. How much money? You could add up all the goods and services produced in the United States this year, and you wouldn't get to $18 trillion. We're exceeding what the U.S. economy is producing in terms of final goods and services, namely your GDP. That's out of hand. That's out of control. And there's no urgency to get back to a balanced budget. So I have a dilemma. The Democratic Party is not the answer. As a matter of fact, my advice to anyone, assuming you want to vote, you have three choices here. One is don't vote at all. It encourages them. That makes sense if neither party reflects your political philosophy. And guess what? Neither party does reflect my political philosophy. And what happens is, and this is where the Republican Party better wise up. There's a reason why, if you ask people their political affiliation today, the number one political affiliation is not Democrat, it's not Republican, it's independent. More and more people are leaving both parties. And when they leave both parties, they're not very motivated to go out and vote in any election, no matter how great the candidate is, because they feel disenfranchised. They feel that both political parties, when you take a real close look at it, don't have the Americans' people's interest as their priority. Both candidates from both parties, their main interest is getting reelected and staying in power. And that means getting huge campaign contributions from people that are advocating policies that are not in the best interest. They're not for the general welfare of the American people. Illegal immigration or illegal aliens. If you ask the American people, and they have been asked repeatedly, do you favor illegal immigration? They say no, absolutely not. A minimum of 2 out of 3, 3 out of 4. It depends on how the question's asked and in what series of questions. But both parties want to give amnesty to the illegal aliens that are living and working in this country today. Both parties want to do that. And that's going to be another issue. So if you've been following the show, you know that the American people are concerned about jobs, the economy, rising health insurance in terms of Obamacare. They're definitely concerned about the invasion of illegal aliens into this country, because those people, and there are 30 to 50 million of them from many countries, are taking the jobs that American citizens, born and raised, educated here, should have, especially young people looking for their first job. And you've been lied to by the political elitist establishment, what I call the P's in Washington. They don't want you to know it's not 11 or 12 million. It's somewhere between 30 and 50 million. The last show, I think it was the last show, or maybe it was the show before that, the Friday show, I'm not sure. I pointed out that the United States Citizenship and Immigration Services, they're part of Homeland Security. They put an RFP out, a request for a proposal, to vendors, in other words, suppliers, for a minimum of $4 million, a maximum of $9 million per year, up to 34 million cards. What kind of cards? Not driver's license. Permanent resident cards. That's the card you need to live and work here legally, as well as employment authorization document. That's what's commonly called a work permit. You need that card if you don't want to become a citizen, but want to work and live here. The first card is called a green card. You probably heard that term. Now, why would they be asking vendors to bid on this request for proposal? The president has made no secret of the fact that after the election, he is going to, by executive order, by a fiat, going to grant legal status to millions of illegal aliens so they can live and work here. He doesn't have that authority. This is unconstitutional, it is illegal, and the consequences of any president doing this should be the House should impeach him and the Senate should convict him of it. Now, he hasn't done it yet, but they're getting ready to do it. They are getting ready to do it. So illegal immigration will be an issue in this election. And if he has the audacity to do this, you're looking at the death of the Democratic Party, because the pushback in the 2016 election will be even worse than the pushback in this election. Because when you deliberately go out of your way to take an elitist position, in other words, shove down the American people's throat something they don't want, such as Obamacare, and now add insult to injury and encourage even more illegal immigration, in other words, a second wave, another invasion, and grant people that have broken into this country or working here illegally, have bought fraudulent documents. In other words, they've committed many crimes to reward criminal behavior because you want to be in power, and that's what this is about. Ultimately, these people will become citizens if he gets away with it and if the Republicans don't stop him. And remember, there are many in the Republican Party, both on the state level and state, city, county, state, and national level, that want this. Why? It's cheap labor. That's all it is. It's cheap labor. And you have economic interest in this country that want cheap labor. They want cheap labor and they want compliant labor. And they're lobbying both parties, and they're giving massive campaign contributions to people running for the offices of senator or representatives to make all the illegal aliens that are currently here citizens. And the first step is to grant them and give them and mail them a card. And once they have this card, a green card or a work permit, they're on their way to amnesty and citizenship, even though they've broken the law. That's what's going on. So this is going to be a very interesting election. And now, I know classical liberals have a problem. They know both political parties, Democrat and Republican, when they've had power, in other words, they've controlled the House, the Senate, and the presidency, have shown an inability to be fiscally responsible. In other words, they've run these massive deficits. That's the first test, and that's a test it's hard to hide. You know, either you balanced the budget or you didn't. And if you didn't balance the budget, how large were the deficits? And what were the cause of the deficits? And it gets back to my earlier point. The size of government grows. The primary reason is war. Governments have ratcheted up the size. Political parties and governments have ratcheted the size of government up after the war. Now, after a war is won, yes, there's demobilization, and yes, there's a cutback in government spending. But it never seems to get back to the previous low level. And we've been doing this for 100 years. 100 years. And it really started with Theodore Roosevelt, a Republican and a progressive. Continued with Woodrow Wilson, a Democrat and a progressive. And both of them responsible for growing the size of government. Now, they, in their wildest dreams, never thought it would get this big, but it has. So what you need is people of integrity, people of principle, people that share your political philosophy, and a party that shares your political philosophy. You see, I listen to a lot of talk radio, as I said earlier, and not all of them, but many of them, because talk radio has a deserved reputation for being largely conservative in terms of its political philosophy. And I think that's an accurate statement. You have a few people out there that are libertarian or share my political philosophy, which is classical liberalism. There's some, but you really have to look for them. Some are local, most are local. So what do classical liberals do? I wouldn't vote for either party. Now, they'll quickly say, you're throwing away your vote. No, I'm not going to encourage either party bad behavior, bad habits. And they've got into bad habits. OK, Because you got to remember, politicians live to get reelected. They're into power. That's what turns them on, power. And to keep the power, they need money. And to get the money to get reelected, they got to take campaign contributions. They need to get their message out. Now, I have no problem with campaign contributions, but I wouldn't give a penny to either party because they're not fiscally responsible. And they want to grow the size of government. Remember, you'd only have to go back to the 1920s under Coolidge, Calvin Coolidge, where the size of government was under 3%, under 3%. Today, it's around 21%. And we, in terms of collection of revenues over many decades, it's been a little over 18%. We've run these massive deficits, whether it's a Democrat or a Republican, in the White House. It doesn't make any difference. So if you think the Republican Party is suddenly, whether it's after this election or even the 2016 election, is suddenly going to get religion and become fiscally responsible and downsize the government, you're dreaming. You're dreaming. Both parties have been massively penetrated by big government types. Some will call themselves conservatives. Some will call themselves liberals. Some will call themselves progressives. Some even will say they're libertarians. Not that many, but some. But it's not how they talk. You have to look at where they spend their money. That's where the rubber hits the road. And it's very easy for me, as well as any commentator, to list the problems that this Democratic Party under Obama has done to the American people. They've shafted the American worker. They've shafted him. They're more concerned about being in power and illegal aliens getting citizenship than you getting a job. That's how bad it is. Both parties. So what do? I always say throw the bums out, Democrats or Republicans. But in this election, you're going to have a lot of motivated people. Motivated voters, both Republicans and Democrats, many former Democrats and Republicans, that if you have a D after your name, you are going to be thrown out. As far as I'm concerned, rest in peace, good riddance. You deserve it because you've ignored the will of the people. You have ignored their concerns. You have not delivered. Results count. Results matter. And you haven't given the results. Believe me, if this economy was booming and unemployment were under 3%, Democrats would get control of the House or the Senate. The problem is it's not even close to that, mainly due to the failed economic policies of the Democratic Party. But do I need to remind you what happened to the Republicans? I think I do. What happened in 2006? Why did the Democrats come back to power? Because you fell into the same trap. You were fiscally irresponsible, and you intervened abroad, and nearly 5,000 people died. Marines, infantry, sailors, people in the Air Force, in Iraq and Afghanistan. And today, both countries are in a bigger mess than, frankly, before we intervened in that country. Remember, war leads to bigger government. Government out of control. And that's exactly what has happened. I'm called let me characterize myself first. I don't believe in government intervention either into the U.S. economy or, for that matter, abroad. I'm a non-interventionist. I believe in capitalism, free market capitalism, free enterprise, consumer sovereignty, limited government, a constitutional republic. But when you get away from those principles and you advocate intervention abroad, you create the conditions where the deficit gets bigger and bigger, the debt piles up, and the American people can't afford it. See, what drives me a little bit nuts, there are people out there, conservatives and libertarians, that will complain and complain and complain, like I'm doing, I'm complaining, about the government, federal government, intervening in the U.S. economy. They complain about higher taxes, which I definitely complain about, but government spending. Yet they will turn around and advocate that the United States should be intervening in this country, this country, this country, this country. I say no. I say mind your own business. What the American people are saying to our government is very simple. Leave us alone. You people in Washington, D.C., the P's, the political elitist establishment, have gotten a big head. We can't afford you anymore. And either you kick the spending addiction disorder habit, or you're going to, if you don't kick it, we're going to kick you out. It's that simple. Either go cold turkey and start balancing the budget, or you're going to be thrown out of office. We don't care if you're a Republican or Democrat, because there are a lot of Republicans that should be thrown out of office. There are some good ones. I understand that. But there are a lot of rotten eggs there. There's a lot of leadership in name only. And a lot of these Republican talk radio hosts better open their eyes. Better open their eyes. The American people aren't falling for your nonsense. They're waking up and saying, hey, neither party, it reflects my political philosophy, my views, a plague on both houses. So even though I think the Republican Party is going to win significantly come November 4th, and I hope they do. I really do hope they do. I'm not optimistic. Let's say two things happen. The Republicans get control of the Senate and the House. Let's say this is a wave election, and they win 56 Senate seats, maybe 58. Let's have a dream. They get 58 seats. I don't think they're going to get it, but assume for a moment they got 58 seats. They don't have 60, but they're real close. And they gain, let's say, another 20 seats in the House. In other words, they now have firm control of both the House of Representatives and the Senate. And they think they've won a big victory. They haven't won a big victory. What they've won is the American people being totally fed up with the Democratic Party, just like they were fed up with the Republican Party in 2006. What comes around goes around. That's why I'm calling for the creation of a third party, a successful third party, that has principles, has integrity, vets the people that run for office. And that will happen. It will happen. It might be 5 years, 10 years. It might even be 20 years, but it will happen. Why? More and more people are leaving both parties. They are sick of both parties. They are sick of being lied to, manipulated. You know, and some of the commentators are very good at pointing out the problems, but they're not very good at giving the answers or the solutions. And there's a reason for it. I always say, are you a conservative or a libertarian or a classical liberal first? Are you a Republican? And sad to say, many of those people are Republicans. That's the problem. Because when almost every year they nominate what I would call a big government so-called conservative, which is a joke, I finally said, I'm not going to vote for them on a presidential election. They don't deserve my vote. They haven't earned it. They can't even pick a true conservative or libertarian. Many of them are very slick, just like Obama. They talk a good game, but they don't walk the walk. And I have a simple test. When was the last time you balanced the budget? Now, they'll have a lot, just like the Democrats do. The Republicans have an answer. Well, we don't control the Senate. We don't control the Senate. Well, you might control the Senate. Then your excuse is, we don't control the White House. And let's say in 2016 they win the White House. They'll just have another excuse. Well, we can't do it in a year. See, this is a tough decision. What do you do if you're a voter? I say don't throw it away. Throw the bums out, and most of them have a D after their name. But there are Republicans that should be thrown out. You got to be selective, and you know who the good guys are and the bad guys are. So that's my two cents. It wasn't a news story, but we're approaching the November elections, and you need to start giving thought as to what you're going to do. I think many of you have made up your mind. Because I listen to the callers calling in, and they're not happy with Obamacare. They're not happy with the job situation. They're not happy with the failed foreign policies. And they are certainly not happy with scandal after scandal after scandal. And they're not happy with both parties wanting to give a pathway to citizenship to illegal aliens, the 30 to 50 million that are here and maybe more. So the Republicans better wake up and start listening to the American people, because if you don't, next election will throw you out, or the next election will throw you out. And someday you're going to wake up and there is going to be a successful third party, even though the Democrats and Republicans stack the deck against any third party winning. But when 50% or more of the party affiliation are independents, that's when you're going to start to see a call for a party of integrity, of principle. And one of the principles will be fiscal responsibility. In other words, not talking about balanced budget, but actually balancing the budget. Not talking about tax reform, but replacing the income tax with something like a fair tax, or what I call fair tax less. In other words, the American people are results-oriented, and they're sick and tired of being lied to, manipulated, and taken advantage of. So the tough decisions need to be made in Washington, and if you're not up to it, we'll replace you, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican. With that, I need to wrap up the show by playing my closing music, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College.